Hello and welcome to another edition of the American Horror Story Podcast, brought to you by baldmove.com. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And tonight we're talking about episode 507, Flicker.
Yep, that's right. What are your thoughts on the episode?
I liked it. I thought it was a good piece of world building, and it's starting to move the plots closer together. I thought it was really interesting that, you know, you and I both, when we were watching this, were like, oh my god, John is the Ten Commandments killer theory confirmed.
Yeah.
But there was
But they didn't confirm it.
There was quite a bit of debate on the forums about whether or not this was confirmation, and some people thought it was the opposite of that. So, you know, at the end of the episode, I was even thinking, man, they're making it so obvious that he's the Ten Commandments killer that it's not going to be shocking when they do the reveal. But now I'm thinking, man, if you don't listen to podcasts and read articles and get a bunch of fan mail, that you're probably walking into this trap completely blind, and you're going to be waylaid when John is revealed to be the killer. If he's revealed to be the killer.
When? Yeah, I think that they think they're being clever, and we're not onto them, and we haven't been onto them for the past few episodes. That's my opinion.
Okay. So, what did you think of the episode?
I liked it. I think we should rename this episode the one where I spent an entire hour and 3 minutes trying to convince you that was Lady Gaga with brown hair.
You know, I was in denial that
every time they showed her face on screen again, you turned to me and said,
"Brown hair."
And said, "Are you sure that's Lady Gaga? No, her. Is that Lady Gaga?"
I've never seen hair and eyebrows change a woman's physical features more than with Gaga. And then the other thing is, you know, I've got a fairly big crush on Alexandra Daddario or Alexandria? Alexandra Daddario. And I did not recognize her at all. Half of the, you know, she was in like zombie glampire makeup, which I'm going to suggest we call them glombies. She was in glombie makeup for about the first half of the show. But even still, like, she's got such a distinctive, striking physical appearance.
Yeah.
I was floored when I found out that that was her playing the part of Natasha.
Yeah. So define being a big fan of Alexandra Daddario.
I liked her work, her nudity work in True Detective.
Okay.
That's essentially, okay, I know she's been in a lot of other things.
Just want to put that out there. Yeah. She hasn't.
Big, big fan.
It's not a lot of other things.
You know, Percy Jackson.
Oh.
He wasn't a fan of the Olympus series.
The what?
The Greek version of Harry Potter. So let's, anything you want to talk about up front before we get right into the episode?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, let's get right into the episode.
Construction is underway at the Hotel Cortez.
So exciting.
Yeah, Will is redoing what floor is this? I don't think they said it, but I think it's been said in the past.
Probably.
The fifth floor is entirely walled off, something like that. But this is not entirely walled off any longer. They decide to break through the 10 inches of steel.
Cold rolled, no doubt.
Cold rolled, surely.
I mean, JPM's not the kind of guy that'd skimp.
Yeah, I mean, how else are you going to keep people locked away for 90 years? So, the wall has been opened, and a couple of construction workers wander in to check it out. It smells like death, they say.
Not even warmed over, just straight up death.
Just straight up death and skeleton rats. And they are attacked by what appear to be zombies. So you were pretty excited. Thought you were going to get a zombie episode.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of the zombie Halloween episode of season 3 of American Horror, Coven. And I thought we might be getting another zombie episode.
Yeah.
Walking Dead hasn't been really filling my zombie niche lately.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't put it past them to throw in some zombies. I was excited. Next scene. John is checking himself into the psych ward at the hospital where Alex is half-assedly trying to talk him out of it or to try to talk him into staying in one of those nicer psych wards.
This is a psych ward for poor people, John.
Yeah, you're crazy. You don't know what you want.
Yeah, this smells like pee and bleach, and we need to get you someplace more comfortable.
I would love to know where their parents are. Are both of their respective sets of parents dead?
Well, probably. Alex's parents killed themselves because she's just a terrible human being.
Scarlett's grandma's busy with Scarlett, so there's one grandparent occupied. Alex is the only one that can help John in this situation.
One grandparent that can endure the banality of their existence.
So in a flashback, it's revealed that John has checked himself into this particular psych ward because that happens to be where the suspect of the Ten Commandments killings is staying.
Yep.
Well, staying like it's a hotel. He's being held here.
He or she.
They.
They.
I'm not going to assign gender. That's there just you rude.
Go. Just keep it gender neutral.
How many
pronouns,
times do
please?
We have to have this conversation? Us and gender.
I don't know. You want to talk about some social justice we witnessed this evening?
Yeah, why not? I thought you were going to go with, we didn't see Elizabeth Taylor once this episode, or Liz Taylor.
Yeah.
That's some social injustice. But tell your story.
We went to, so my son's in the STEM program. He's in third grade in a pretty backward school district. And he was Albert Sabin, the inventor or researcher for the oral polio vaccine. Saved a lot of lives, you know, eradicated polio.
But this story is not about Albert.
Not about Albert or my son. One of...
So these kids were all assigned famous figures, scientific figures in history.
And they're kind of like wax museum. They dressed up like them and they had this little prepared speech that's like a minute long.
Like a poster board behind.
Poster board behind them. It's your standard science mm-hmm. deal. And, you know, the shocking thing is there's only three women in science. And
apparently,
there was
I tried to count, and they had all
Amelia Earhart, Sally Ride, and Ada Lovelace.
Jane Goodall was there.
Jane
too.
Goodall, four. We had four women in STEM.
So I found it to be shocking that current, this is off topic, kind of, but in current day STEM classes, the women, or the girls, outnumber the boys. So most of these men, these historical men that were famous, are being played by girls.
All of the astronauts, your Buzz Aldrins, your John Glenn, all of them were played by little girls.
And we even have white people playing.
We had a cute little 9-year-old girl mm-hmm. playing George Washington Carver, full on in blackface.
Full blackface.
Like when I turned the corner and saw her standing there,
I was
audible
shocked.
Gasp.
Yeah.
That like this
mouth agape. I was desperately trying to find her parents to make eye contact.
Yeah, like I expect this from Bethel, Ohio. Okay, I expect that kind of like ignorance and insensitivity. But yeah. Can't believe that a teacher didn't jump in front of this and be like, "Oh, we can't do this." But then I realized something: there is not a single black person in that entire school district.
Oh my God, there's not.
No, there's not. So it could be. I mean,
if there's no black people around to be offended,
it's like the 1950s. They don't even. Yeah, it's the Invisible Man who's like, oh, so I don't see any problem here. Anyway, we had a cross-dressing blackface George Washington Carver. It was scandalous.
He did make damn good peanut butter, though. That little blackface girl. So back on topic. Elizabeth and Iris come to examine the newly opened steel wall, and both just are also mouths agape. There must be a blackface person standing in the back behind the steel wall because they are terrified, and neither one of them know what's behind there. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Nope.
So we go to Marcy, the realtor, being the worst, as per her usual self. And she's talking about putting the dog down and talking about how much she hates people immediately after hanging up the phone with them.
I noticed that everyone that dies in this show seems like they have to be some version of terrible.
I think they just brought her back because, one, she was a shit.
Well, but even
house.
Like the construction workers, like they, it's not enough that they're just curious dudes. They had to be kind of like, leeringly curious.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, I don't even think there's anything wrong with what we're doing, but we're going to act like it's naughty and wrong. And, like, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think if there's been a truly innocent victim other than the German girls or the Swedish girls.
I think the...
And the couple they picked up in a graveyard.
The Max Greenfield. The,
Who?
Gabriel. The junkie that died in, like, the first episode.
Yeah, but he was kind of portrayed as a twat. I'm talking about the perform, like, you
well,
know,
he,
not,
I,
just because you're douche,
a twat doesn't...
just because you're douche or a twat does not mean you should die screaming. Granted, I'm just saying that it seems like Murphy is trying to make the characters that are being killed by these monsters odious, so that he can still play fast and loose with who's the good guys and who's the bad guys.
Exactly, flip it, stick it in reverse it, and then Valentino and Natasha later turn out to be the good guys. They were just thirsty.
Yeah. Hashtag thirsty.
So I think Marcy, the only reason she's staying in the Cortez on this particular evening is so that they have a throwaway character to kill.
Probably.
So no more selling lemon houses or lemon hotels, Miss Marcy. If that
is my lemon, this was an awesome hotel. It came with a bonus steel panic room. Like, that's
it's you just have to break in there.
Talking about your bonus rooms, that's like super bonus.
So then we flash back to Valentino in his movie The Son of a Sheik. We see that Finn Wittrock is playing Valentino now. So that's why they killed him so quickly last episode. Also, this is kind of a callback to when she and Tristan had their first night together. And she said, "You remind me of someone." Like, and she could forget so easily.
You know, we've breezed past the whole anal bleaching incident
of
Mr. Drake. But can we talk about how terrible the accent on Valentino is? Like, this is some kind of muddy
Italian
by way of Transylvania kind of thing.
There's a little Russian in there, too.
Eastern Europe, Russian. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little Slavic. But it is just all over the place.
Yeah. No, it's just...
And then when he later on is saying, "I was met by a man speaking Italian with a thick German accent," I'm like, did you look yourself in the mirror? What's going on here?
Are you speaking to yourself, sir?
Yeah, I don't think you should talk shit about other people's accents, yo.
Yeah. So Elizabeth is, she's talking to her friend about how she just thinks that Valentino and his wife, Natasha, are just the height of class.
He's a god.
When Valentino calls upon her. They start passing notes like school children.
Yep, that's the equivalent of the hotline blinging. When you get a nice monogrammed letter.
That can only mean one thing.
That can only mean one thing.
So she arrives at his home for dinner, and she says, my father was from... Wait, I'm from Borkenschnork, and my father was from Sicily, and he was a plumber. My father was Mario from the Super Mario Brothers franchise.
Sure.
Busted. So she's fangirling on him. And
pretty hard.
Yeah. Then he invites her to dance, and they have this... I thought it was a fun dance scene with the flashes of, like, silent movie type cuts. Before, dun-dun-dun, you find that his wife, Natasha, is standing on the stairs watching them.
Harsh is the buzz. Busted. Instantly.
Yeah. So she thinks that she is has been caught being the mistress of the other woman. And his wife, Natasha, your, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Your god, I suppose.
Oh, my god?
Yeah. Says that
pretty face.
Says that we're just getting a publicity divorce, but you're here because gods have appetites.
Yeah, and there's like, throughout this whole episode, they wanted me to simultaneously feel that Natasha was kind of disdainful of Elizabeth. And, you know, she had this whole literal cat and mouse game, where a little metaphoric, but literal because that's how she labeled it, cat and mouse game with her. But also that Elizabeth was equally in love with them both.
I didn't think that Natasha, I mean, I think Natasha came on a little strong in this scene. But I was watching for that and I didn't get it. Well, for the rest of the episode.
Except for like when they're morphing from Glombeat to Glampire, she goes on this tirade about your pet and scorn on you both, and you had to do this, and you wasn't like anything about her hotline blinging.
Like, they haven't spent the last 90 years arguing about
that. That's true. Oh my god, can you imagine being a steel box? God. I told you this shit was going to come back and bite us in the ass.
This is all your fault, you know.
Yeah, but no, but they think they found their little unicorn.
What's a unicorn?
So a unicorn amongst polyamorous couples is an unattached single female who is delighted to be the exclusive sex toy for a married couple has no emotional or other needs than to sexually fulfill whatever fantasies these married couples would have.
Why do you call it a unicorn?
Because they fucking don't exist.
Oh. I walked right into that one.
They're mythical creatures.
That reminds me of that joke from Chasing Amy.
Oh, yeah. They're same concept. Same concept.
So Elizabeth arrives at the hotel. This is still in the flashback time. She's at the hotel with an unmentioned, or the same friend from before, I suppose. And she talks about how you've been gone all summer and you've been hiding. And
been
I just...
out of circulation.
I have to know who you're seeing. And she says, I'll never tell.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't say it like that. Okay, I have a question here. This is where things start to... Where, and upon second watch, I got a little confused about the timeline.
Okay.
Why was she hiding all summer?
Because she's getting pounded out by the two gods of
That's
the silver
it?
Screen.
I think
so. I
thought
so.
It was at this time they were making a transformation. And then I realized it's not until after Valentino's death that he was turned into a vampire. I thought they already were.
No, no, no.
Spent the summer doing that whole thing.
No, no, no.
But that's just my bad. All right. So they are there at the opening week party of the Hotel Cortez in the midst of Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And some asshole runs in to ruin the party saying that he's dead. Valentino is dead.
And Elizabeth instantly goes full on 1970s Ginny from Forrest Gump. She finds the nearest balcony and she starts to threaten to throw herself off of it. And JPM swoops in and scoops her up in his loving arms and says, I'm going to stalk and rape you probably.
Yeah, he says, I may never let you go. And my first reaction was to say, oh, what a creep.
But then,
and then I was like, oh, well, yeah, he's a
yes,
creep.
Yes,
yeah,
we know this. This is established back here. This is not new information. He's actually much worse than this.
Yes. That's him being, well, not a creep by his standards, right?
Right. That's on his best behavior. He's just a sexual harasser.
Yeah. So some fangirls, what is this? A year later, fangirls visiting the tomb of Valentino.
It's in a very posh, fancy mausoleum.
Yes. And they read an article out of a magazine revealing that it has been a year since his death. And the article mentions Pola Negri. Now, you were unaware that Valentino was a real person.
I was, yeah. I don't know why I haven't cottoned to... well, I mean... Like, JPM's not a real person.
No.
So, like, it's kind of weird the way he mixes real historical characters. I don't have a problem with this. These people are all dead.
Yeah.
And they're if they have great-grandchildren, they probably get a kick out of the fact that their dad was being portrayed as
Well, he's done this before with the serial killer dinner party.
That's what I'm saying. But we talked about how that's a little, you know, because you got victims that are still alive and one killer's still up. But, you know, it's all fair game. I just thought it's weird to use the name drop these silent movie stars when this is a reference that hardly anyone's going to catch. But I guess everybody can Wikipedia it and feel smart when they discover that, yes, they are real people. And then you actually mentioned that who's the woman that fainted at his funeral?
Pola Negri. The Hollywood character. I would say she was like the Kardashian of her time.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, no.
But they mention in the scene that she fainted at Valentino's funeral. She did more than that. And that is, she had a flower arrangement made that spelled out her name, Pola, and had it placed on Valentino's tomb.
That's how you mark your territory. Classy.
His coffin.
Super classy.
Yeah, no. That's... I'm planning on doing that at your funeral. I might just kill you now to do it. But also, I should mention that on the Up Yours Downstairs podcast.
Yeah, our buddies, the first time I heard Tom and Kelly.
Yeah, the first time I heard about the Valentino Pola Negri story is Tom and Kelly did this really great piece all about Pola Negri. So definitely check it out. I have no idea what episode it's in.
Me either.
So you're just going to have to listen
to all
of
You
them.
Should send them feedback and ask them. Put to work on them. You know, it's a small price to pay to gain a fan, I think.
I'll tweet her.
She'll be like, block.
She has no idea who I am. So I have completely lost my place here. So they are talking about the woman in black who comes to place a rose on his grave every day. So, speak of the devil, she arrives. What do you know? It's Elizabeth that's doing it.
Didn't see that coming.
Nope. So she comes to cry. I don't know if I would have enough energy to come and cry and place a rose on someone's grave every single fucking
day. Why you're murder fucking with your new husband?
Yeah.
Like, by night? That's a lot to fit
monthly,
in a day.
Maybe.
Sure.
In the first year?
Sure.
Maybe.
And you taper it off. Like, you know, then it's every 3 months, quarterly, then biannually, and then annually, and then you just start celebrating, like, the silver anniversaries. And you just kind of tapers off.
Yeah. So it's on this day that she comes to grieve and Natasha is there and they get into a little spat where she says, "You didn't even come to his funeral." And she says, "Why would I come to his funeral when he's alive?" Sorry. It's the drama. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are silent movie stars. So they're all about the big giant eyes batting and chests heaving and.
So Valentino was there at his own grave, which less than a year after
so
his
meta.
Own funeral, the three women who are big fans have just left. So no risk of anyone seeing you alive there.
Sure.
Jay say. If there were vampires, they might have some sort of skill to stop that from happening, but they're not.
No, they're just the humble glampire.
So they explain what happened. That they couldn't write, but they can just, show up in plain view. That he was taking a train tour for his movie.
I do think it's bullshit that they couldn't get any kind of word to her of what's going on.
I know.
And then to try to show up and act fake offended that she got remarried. Come on.
Come on.
You can't give him a taste of Mount Olympus and then have him go back to the hovel.
Yeah. So he... Do you think they photoshopped his face in these flashback scenes? Because he seems a lot more thin and gaunt than the Tristan character.
No, I think he's just doing the male model trick of like sucking in his cheeks and...
I don't think that's a thing.
All that kind of thing. The lighting and... Come on. Yeah, they can do a lot of stuff with lighting and makeup.
So, on this train tour, which is all him and paparazzi... Why do a train tour? Is that just to go to each town, just away from the back of the train car?
Well, but what else are they going to do? I mean, yeah, they did. Wasn't that like that's what politicians used to do, like the whistle stop tours?
Yeah.
Because it's not like they had like airplanes were newfangled and cars were shitty and unreliable. And who the hell's going to get on a horse wagon?
Yeah.
They didn't, the pneumatic tube that hasn't been built from New York to California yet.
I guess that makes sense. So... He discovers that there is a person who is creeping on him the whole time. Doesn't have a press pass or anything. And it's still shot very much in the style of Nosferatu.
Yes. Yeah, there's like shots and sequences and angles and like with the shadows over his neck. And those are stuff that's ripped. And so initially I thought that this Nosferatu references was really cool because, they've been playing with this whole vampire concept, not a vampire concept, whatever. I mean, that's an iconic piece of vampire history. But then that kind of turned on me when I realized that they are postulating that this is the F.W. Murnau. He's literally the director of Nosferatu, and it's not just a reference. It's like the reference wrapped in on itself and became too cute.
A flashback of a flashback?
Yeah. I was like, it's like two Nosferatu mirrors staring at each other into infinity.
Yeah.
So what did you think?
No, I got it. I got it maybe a half a second before they shoved it down my throat.
Right.
So, yes, the director of Nosferatu is F.W. Murnau. Well, with the train and the shadows and stuff, it also had influences of Bram Stoker's Dracula. I got a little bit of that in there.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, maybe we'll have a whole another flashback in that style.
That would be cool if they actually paid homage to, like, all the different vampire genres.
Wait, they already did. Didn't they dress like Dracula and Lucy in Halloween?
Yes, Devil's they did. I guess they did. Maybe they have made reference. Now they need, like, Blackula. They need Dracula Dead and Loving It. They need a Leslie Nielsen, like, a physical comedy pratfall spoof.
Yeah, that would fit right in.
Sure.
So, F.W. Murnau became a... I'm sorry, didn't become anything. He caught a blood virus in the Carpathian Mountains where he stumbled across a wild roaming gang of sex monsters who had this blood virus.
Beautiful sex monsters.
Of course.
That's beautiful. The full name of Gaga's fan club.
Beautiful sex monsters?
Yeah, it's not just the monster. It's the beautiful, beautiful sex monsters.
Of course. So, did we just come full circle?
About?
Lady Gaga being the originator of this. Lady Gaga playing a glampire who's not a vampire, who's also the reason there's a roaming pack of sex monsters. Super secretly
the progenitor of all vampires.
We figured it out.
I think
Podcast over.
I think the jig would be up when, you know, Natasha and Valentino bite into it. And it's like, hey, you got us, you know.
Hey.
What's the matter, you?
What's the matter, you? And it's just spaghetti sauce running through her veins.
Sure.
All right. We're done with this.
Your vampire blood's so sweet to make your mama cry.
So they said.
My accent's still better than Valentino's in this episode.
Yeah.
My comically racist Italian accent.
It's a me, a Mario. So they came back just so they could share this virus with her. So.
Well, here's the other thing. Is it, why did Ryan Murphy put in the line about the fact that F.W. Murno is trying to preserve Valentino from the upcoming Armageddon of talking pictures? Like, I get it was a real thing that artists of the time thought that talking pictures was bullshit. I mean,
yeah, I've seen Singing in the Rain.
That's I was about to say, like, my knowledge of film history comes entirely from, of silent film history comes entirely from watching Singing in the Rain. But I choose to believe that that's a documentary, and now here Murphy is playing into it. Now, I imagine Murphy's a big Sing in the Rain fan, but were people really that? I mean, and also, what does he think about that? Like, when he gets out of his steel prison, what's going to piss him off most? The fact that he missed out on the opportunity to kill JPM, or the fact that movies are bigger than ever?
Huh.
Especially since he didn't have a especially whiny or nasally voice. He was tall, dark, handsome.
He's just got a shitty accent.
He has a shitty accent, but they could have got a vocal corch. A vocal corch. I need one of them vocal corches. Yeah.
Vocal corch.
I can't stand him. I need a vocal corch.
Can't stand him.
But no, they could have got him a vocal coach and worked on that shitty accent.
Yeah,
his
sure.
His timbre is fine. I think that it would make the ladies moist. That's what you're looking for in a Hollywood stud.
Moistness, yes. Moistacity.
And the fellas that are into that kind of thing, get them a little al dente.
So, yes.
That's the equivalent for moistness.
What would he be more pissed about?
Yeah. I mean, he gets straight up. Of course, it sounds like
probably
he's pretty down.
Probably the movie thing.
He's probably down with the glampire lifestyle anyway, so it's like.
Yeah.
But he could have had a run. He could have had another couple of years, you know, and then faked his death and cemented his legacy.
Well, I think it works out better. Now he can come back and...
Do you think he's going to come back as Tristan?
No.
Why?
Tristan's dead.
But what I'm saying is, if he finds out that someone that looked exactly like him as a male fashion model, maybe he's going to look at a magazine and see him, he can realize... I can have this new shot at found glory in the modern age and get another 100 years of flickering godlike immortality out of it.
That makes sense.
I don't know. I'm just trying to see where they're going with this. I mean, obviously, they're going for this epic three-way revenge fantasy that's coming together with Gaga at the center of it. But
will Liz Taylor have another shot with the great love of her life?
One
she deserves, one of the class.
I feel like Liz is going to run this shit.
The one who mostly doesn't speak.
Like, when we're finished with the season, the Cortez is going to be owned and operated by Liz, and she's going to be a glampire.
Yeah.
And maybe she can even be with Valentino. That would be a nice touch, too. I mean, that's kind of a creepy. It's like kind of like, say you're dating an identical twin, and he dies, so you just take his brother for a consolation prize. Well, you'll look like him. You're not the same person at all, but you look like him.
Close enough.
Yeah. I mean, they did fall in love in 3 weeks, so the totally physical infatuation kind of love affair, so maybe that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Who better to comfort you after the death of your loved one than someone who is...
You're just looking for cheekbones for days is what you're looking for in your time of grief.
Exactly. Natasha calls out Elizabeth for having quickly married after they died or disappeared.
mean, the guy had been in the ground way less than a year when this happened.
She still came to visit every single day with a rose tears and full black. So, can't say she forgot. So, they get married. And as she's explaining how much she loved the glamour and the things that she got from him, she still got married alone with him in the hotel lobby. And then after the lobby was the after party. Oh, wait, I got that backwards. So she says that she never loved him, but she was drawn to his darkness. We get more shots of Lady Gaga's just great ass.
Wow.
Just how?
Yeah, it's something else.
Yeah. So
also, Miss Evers didn't seem thrilled.
No.
I never had gotten a love connect, like that she was in love with JPM. I always thought it was more like,
so. Yeah.
You know, she just loved the killing after she got fucked up with her son and the ghost in the ghost costume. But
no, it kind of seemed like, you know, when your best friend gets a new boyfriend or girlfriend and you get kind of jealous because suddenly they're not really the same person anymore. And they start spending time with that person
like
when they could have been spending it with
you. It's a Saving Silverman plot. That kind of, okay, gotcha.
Exactly. So, she's got sheets to clean, so she gets over it pretty quickly. and then she finds him murdering a person, or having murdered a person. And she says, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "It's just a hobo."
Right.
And she's like, "Well...
Are you displeased?"
And she says, "Well, next time, why don't you do something that makes it count? Get me some jewels or some shoes or something. And also, I want to watch."
Where does this come from?
So she aids and abets his murder.
She
butter.
Went from being
a
love-struck starlet.
See, this is where I got confused about
accomplice to murder to being a glampire. Like, there is some really rough, broken ground that they are driving four wheels drive style over.
This is why I got confused about when she became a vampire. Yeah. I thought she already was.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that she's doing this.
Like, I get it, you're a little grief struck, but to completely lose your touch on humanity
she's
and what's
opportunistic.
Right.
If you don't get on board with a serial killer, you just might be the next
you gotta
victim.
You got to watch those Daughters of Italian Plumbers. They're just, you know, worse than Catholic schoolgirls as far as going bad as soon as they get off the farm, get off the plumbing plantation.
Any child of Mario and Peach has got to be just trouble. Trouble.
Well, I mean,
days.
Your mother's getting abducted by a dinosaur turtle you turn around.
Exactly. So... is that everything in that scene?
I think
so. I think we got it.
There's a train. They're supposed to hitch a train. Hitch a train in New York.
That's
and then
the
to everywhere.
To New York, straight across. Take that train right across the ocean to Europe.
Yeah.
And then back across the ocean to Antarctica.
Yeah.
And then.
They really wasted a lot of money on that transatlantic railroad. If they'd only knew that, like.
He was just going to die halfway
fast
through the
air
tour.
Travel, safe, reliable, was just around the corner. They could have saved a bunch of money.
But they didn't.
No.
So we are back in with John in the mental ward. He's walking the hallways, eavesdropping in plain sight.
yeah, his skulking is high comedy. Actually, everything about this scene is high comedy. The guard ludicrously bragging about guarding this little girl.
Yeah.
And the nurse being like fake. I think she was genuinely enthralled in this guy's tales of bravery, and then
you notice that as soon as he starts to hit on her, she's like, "Well, I'm gonna fuck off now."
And then John just easily subduing this idiot. Good. Not the world's greatest scene. It's kind
of
like
you ever held one of those metal lunch trays.
No,
it's not made out of like thick steel.
Hmm.
If I were to hit you across the face, you might be surprised. But
have you ever seen the movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke?
No.
Because there's a funny scene
but
of
I
him.
I have seen WWE where they hit someone with a metal chair.
There's a funny scene where he's going through the department store with the guy he's going to be doing a wrestling gig with later the night. And they're actually going through the hardware department, like the houseware department, and like testing like different things they can bash each other in the head with. Like, it's a little too sturdy. And yeah, so I feel like while you can get a really sturdy metal and institutional tray, probably... in this type of application, they're not going to let you have one of those for this reason.
Yeah.
They're not going to give you sharp objects. They're not going to give you shoelaces. They're not going to give you mattresses with seams.
I just clock you right in the temple.
They sure as hell ain't going to give you a giant flat billy club that you can to waylay people with.
You know what I thought would have been a more effective tool?
What's that?
The book he was carrying into the scene. But that's just me. So anyway, back to the point of this. He knocks the guard out with a lunch tray. So I want you to take note of that. I'm going to mention it later.
Okay.
He grabs the guard's security badge, finds the room that the detective was assigned to, which is 153, which must be where the killer is being held.
Sure.
He finds the room, and inside it's just a little girl.
He's shocked. Just like, how can you be a suspect?
So he goes inside. She reveals that her name is Ren. And he said, you were found at the TV station. She said, yeah, because I helped.
Mm-hmm.
And then it does this flashback of the killer, the unknown killer, shoving the television evangelist's insides full of silver coins. And she cuts the security guard's throat. And then she walks up to the killer and says, Ren.
Yeah.
So for a second, I thought she said run.
Uh-uh.
But the TV subtitles say that she said Ren.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I don't understand.
Doesn't really make sense right now. And I'm not sure if it'll ever make sense. But it doesn't make sense
right now. Why would a little girl just come up and say her name to someone she was already pretty familiar with, having committed numerous murders before?
I don't know.
Is she a Pokemon?
Why would
she just says her name?
Does that what Pokemon do?
Yeah.
Is that
Pikachu?
Gotcha.
So it's only in the TV version.
Well, she's little teeny tiny cute. Maybe she does live in a Pokeball.
Ren. But in the game, her sound is more like... Sorry.
She stuffs silver down Charizard's throat. It's super effective.
Yes.
Come on, we're not going to devolve into Pokemon video game talk. Let's keep it moving. Keep it moving now.
All right, fine. So she says, I was there at all of the murders. I know these intimate details, so I must have been there. And she begins to blame herself, and he says that she sounds like his little girl Scarlet, and that's how she's probably thinking about things. And then she says...
Oh, yes, that daughter that I used to love so much and read her stories by FaceTime.
Whose name I can't quite remember. Yeah.
You know, on a nightly basis, and I've completely gotten derailed because of my serial killer obsession.
So,
poor Scarlet.
Is John... Okay, so my first theory about this scene was, is John hallucinating a person being there? Which I don't think is true, but...
What person? Why... Ren?
Yeah.
No, Ren's real.
Why do you say that?
Because the holding cell's not going to be empty.
But what if John's actually the person that's in there?
Then that's unusual suspects level bullshit, and I reject it utterly.
Right.
Shame on you, Murphy, if you make him the one in this cell. Also, how would he get out?
What if security guard came to check on him? He uses his own untouched food tray. It's shown untouched in the scene. He uses that food tray, knocks out the security guard, takes the keys, and escapes.
No.
Ren is his ghost companion that's leading him.
No, because it shows... I would have to believe that Murphy filmed the completely alternate reality universe with no hints of... Because the other thing is the food's untouched because Ren's a vampire. Glampire, sorry. So, no, I'm not buying that.
Just putting it out there.
Well, your theory's bad, and you should feel bad.
Well, fuck you then. So, hey, at least I'm coming up with theories. What do you got? I have a scene where
I'm a disciple of Hef.
Ren is describing her father being a pervert. Now, I know for a fact that her father is not the killer because his face is shown in the scene. So, boom.
Also, this is a lot of backstory and detail for a figment of his imagination. Just saying.
Well, there's a lot of backstory and detail to Alex, and she's a figment of our imagination. So
she's a nightmare is what she is.
Yeah. So she describes that her father said that he couldn't wait for her to be a woman so he could start presumably touching her. And he leaves her
Gross.
In a hot car to bake, and she's saved by Elizabeth.
Yeah, that's
now,
the
this
thing.
Is
like,
where
this
Elizabeth
show, man.
Is truly being the people's champion by saving this poor little girl.
Yeah, not from neglect, neither.
I don't understand why you're... Okay, I'm not blaming a child for doing what their parents tell them to do.
Uh-huh.
I just don't understand why your own basic like survival instincts don't kick in. Why don't you roll down a window when it's hot as balls?
Because she wanted to die. That's what she said in the scene. She's like,
really?
Yeah. She said, I thought that there was an alternative to growing up, and it was to die in this car, and it would be better off than being sexually abused by my father as soon as I hit puberty.
So I guess my next question is, why is this little girl helping him? If she's not a hallucination, then why is this person he's projecting all of these feelings and fears and wishes of his own daughter and his own life onto and allowing her to help him kill people?
I think that's exactly what's happening. I think you just stated it without even knowing it, that he and his, if I'm going to go full on the Ten Commandments killer theory, that he and his Ten Commandments killer incarnation in that psychic state is transferring his feelings to Scarlet on this girl that he's met because he chased after Holden and, you know, found their vampire nest. And he became the kind father that she wished she had, and he lured her into helping her with all these crimes that she probably didn't feel good about, but she liked the attention and the feelings of love and acceptance she got from the Ten Commandment killer version of John. And you clearly, because she's clearly conflicted here and says, you know, I like you and I don't want this to end. But, you know, she's also realizing that he's kind of tormented and maybe crazy. I don't know. She's clearly a troubled little girl. And she's also thinking that, like, this, you know, they presented this whole glampire existence of the children with Lady Gaga as almost like idyllic by kid standards. But she's saying here that, you know, maybe
I never
staying
liked
with
jelly
my,
beans that much when
yeah.
I was a kid.
And we're playing like 1980s Nintendo games. Come on. Like, I was turned in 1989. Like, Tetris was state of the art then. The world has moved on. You know, for example, Pokemon. They can't get Pokemon in the playroom.
For reals.
But I feel like that it's kind of telling that she's saying, after 30 years of this, I wonder if it wouldn't have been better to stay with my dad. Like, that's pretty dark and should indicate to us kind of how fucked up things are in the land of Gaga.
So we go back to the zombie creatures, who we don't know who they are yet, are feeding on the realtor Marcy, and then they finish with this feeding and look in the mirrors, and we see that it's Valentino and Natasha. They're slowly getting their life force back.
Yeah.
Can I just say that Russell Edgington did it better in True Blood? So this is when they start to fight and Natasha starts to blame Valentino for everything that's happened. Again, they've had a lot of time to do this.
But I get it that they spent more time in this shitty hotel than they have living in the real world. But when you're immortal, like, this is essentially going to be a lost day at the DMV, right? When you're 1,000 years old, the fact that you spent 70 years in a steel box in a hotel room is going to be a very droll story to tell your other vampire friends. Like, when we were newborns, who were we rubes, you know?
Yeah. I just think it's kind of interesting that how long were they vampires? No, it was a year. Okay. I'm trying to put together the timeline of how long they were vampires before they were locked away in this room. But they got a good solid year of doing glamping it up before they were locked away. So they're pretty familiar with how to be a vampire and had a lot of time to feed. And
well, they also been subsiding on rats, is what they said as well.
Yeah.
Although, how the fuck does a rat get into a sealed steel box?
Okay, so this weird thought occurred to me while I was watching this show, and that is, what if they just fed off of each other, like, back and forth forever?
Pooping back and forth forever? I don't think you can do that.
Well, why couldn't you?
I don't know.
Exactly.
Because it's like, that would violate, I mean, there's got to, like, it, to the extent that vampires are based in science in the real world, that would violate the laws of thermodynamics. Thermodynamics.
Well, vampires are not real things, and these aren't vampires, so it can happen.
All right,
why
sure.
Didn't they try it? So
maybe it's just like really a vampire taboo. You don't drink off each other, you sicko.
You don't go blood to blood on the first date.
Never.
So a group of Australian meathead strippers check in with one bed next door. So that sounds like a raucous good time for them to get their feet on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just enough meaty Australian blood to put you back to full speed. I could use some meaty Australian blood in my life. JPM is preparing dinner with Miss Evers. Miss Evers frets that the Wellington will get cold. And JPM...
She's just being a bitch because Elizabeth is coming for her annual. I'm telling you, there's some kind of jealousy here.
They don't love you like I love you.
Mm.
Yep. So, well, I feel like she's kind of like that doting motherly type, maybe? I don't know. I don't think it's a lover thing, though. Definitely not. So Elizabeth does finally show up late. And they speak about how they have an arrangement for a monthly dinner. She's taking her dinner a week early. And she says, I plan to marry again. And it's going to be this Will Drake character that's taking over your hotel. And he says, well, you've done a great job. Just don't kill him on the property because I don't want to spend the rest of forever with him. And she says, well, why couldn't it be just for love? For the first time, I think that I am in love. He says, surely not the first time. And she says, oh, don't fool yourself, sweetie. I was never in love with you. And he says, oh, but have you forgotten about your unicorn married couple? Well, they've been locked away in the hotel forever. Well, they're out now, so deal with that. Any thoughts on this?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
So we cut to them in modern day garb, clothes, hair, everything. They're back to their full selves again as they leave. They're about to go hit the town, and then suddenly I remember that there is a horde of vampire children out there somewhere.
I got a little bit of vampire math for you. So Valentino says they need 100 more bodies like the realtor to feel like themselves. Apparently, an Australian male stripper is worth
33.33.
Middle-aged. If rounding down.
Uh-huh.
Middle-aged realtors.
Yeah, I buy that.
They're like the OxyClean concentrate of vampire blood.
Do you think they're roiding it up when they work out? That amps up the juice, right?
They're blood doping. That's the latest thing. I don't even know what that means, but I hear it murmured in hushed tones.
Blood doping?
Blood doping.
That doesn't sound like a real thing.
It's legit. It's like they take your blood out and they spin it through a centrifuge. They spin it through a centrifuge and like extract some platelets and serum and then shoot it back in you, and it's like supercharges your blood. It's got like twice as good stuff in it and half the bad stuff.
That doesn't make any sense.
I know, but
I donate platelets and they take the platelets out and I don't feel supercharged. I feel weak as fuck.
Well, that's because they took out like what? Then what if they saved them and then wait for your body to build them back up and then shot them back in you, and then you're super platelets. You're just like coagulating all kinds of shit.
Sounds painful.
Yeah, maybe.
And dangerous.
And maybe it's not platelets so much as the red blood cells. I don't know. I just know that it's a thing. And like they shoot it right into your knees and it heals your knees. It's something Kobe did in Germany.
Kobe?
Got another 5 years in the NBA out of it.
So we cut to John and... So as the doors open for Valentino and Natasha to hit the town, the doors also cut to John and Ren escaping the hospital. So they run down the street and he says, now take me to the killer. And she looks at him like, the fuck, you are the killer. And she's like, well... I guess we'll have to go back to the hotel. And he says, no, seriously, he won't hurt you anymore. Just tell me where he is. And she says, well, will you kill him? And he says, if I have to. And she says, well, I hate to see it in this way. So deuces. And then she runs out in front of a truck.
So that's the episode. Do you have any like thoughts on the whole thing in conclusion? Or should we just go right to feedback?
Yeah.
Doug L. says, I had a chance to think a little bit more about this Prophet Moses, Ten Commandments killer connection that we speculated a few episodes back.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps where this is going is a frame-up. If Angela Bassett could pin the murders on Gaga, a life sentence for an immortal being would be some exquisite revenge. Now, he actually sent this in before this week's episode, so keep that in mind.
Okay.
She'd be separated from her son and all the other little monsters she's got.
Mm-hmm.
And would probably have to be put in solitary confinement. We saw how bad Iris looked after just a few hours without blood, so an eternity of that for Elizabeth would be very rough indeed. Even more horrific after we see this episode. Like, Gaga in solitary confinement would just wither into a raisin and then presumably die? That's the thing I never understood about vampires, whether it's in True Blood or this show.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you're totally deprived of blood and, like, buried in silver chains or whatever, do you eventually die? Or you just persist like that forever?
Is that you talking, or are you still reading the email?
No, it's me talking now. Oh. Sorry. Doug stopped like two paragraphs ago.
Okay. I was like, wow, he just started free associating at the end of this email. Just, you know, just letting loose. Well, these aren't vampires, for one. So.
Sure.
I don't know. I guess the rules for each vampire are different.
Which I gotta say,
I don't think you ever die as a
vampire. As the weeks go on, that statement that these aren't vampires gets to be more and more cheeky.
It's
when, you know, the character that started the American strain of vampire was the director that was going to research the real vampires in the old country and discovered the OG or the OVs.
Mm-hmm.
And like, come the fuck on.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? That the Prophet Moses is going to be a frame-up thing. She's going to pin all these murders on Gaga and pack her away for in mortal prison for a life sentence.
That would be truly terrible, but I don't see
I mean,
that.
Eventually, like, they'd find out she's a vampire, right? Like,
yeah, when she serves 20 consecutive life sentences and yeah. She's able to actually serve those sentences. And
by
released.
The way, when she goes for physical, which I assume they do in prison or some kind of and she's 75 degrees, yeah, that wouldn't fly. Second, perhaps we know what the little blonde vampires are for. Maybe Elizabeth has designs on somehow transplanting Bartholomew's brain or soul into a less monstrous body. While the mechanism for this hasn't been touched upon yet this season, since previous seasons have featured witches and mad scientists, the potential is there. Your thoughts?
I don't think so. I don't know. I'm of the impression that she thinks that she's saving these children when she takes them, not abducting the cutest children so that she can supplant her own child's memories.
I mean, my thought is that if that was her plan, why hasn't she gotten to it? She's got a whole cadre of adorable blonde toe-headed children, so get to transferring. What are you waiting for?
Is it some kind of do that?
Is it some kind of Venus has to be in the house of Mars and aligned with Jupiter with a blood red moon kind of, you know, vampiric prophecy thing?
She's not a mad scientist. She wouldn't even know how to do that.
Well, that's more of a cult thing, but sure.
A cult thing.
So, not the biggest fans of the transference theory, Doug. Sorry about that. Claire F. says, my headcanon is that the Countess, while married to J.P. March, got pregnant by someone else, the person who turned her. Now, this, again, I think was something that we got from before this episode, but I still think it works. She said she's born in 1904. The abortion murder house visit was 1926, which is 2 years before she met Valentine, if I'm going to add new information to it.
Valentino.
Since we didn't know when she was turned, although we do now, she was turned approximately 1925.
Mm-hmm.
She could have still been human at this time. So this all tracks. We know she was having vigorous sex with JPM. We know she's having lots of sex with it can't be Valentino's baby unless they fucked her right there in the mausoleum.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, they fed on her there at the mausoleum. Maybe they did. Maybe there was one last night when she was being turned, and that explains a horrific nature. Anyway, going by Twilight rules, and she says parenthetically, yep, I'm going there, a human person can get pregnant by a vampire, and the baby progresses very quickly. That's where the Twilight similarities end, because Bella basically gave birth to a fully formed child model for J. Crew, and the Countess gave birth to, well, Gollum, so there you go.
I just don't understand how that baby ever developed from sperm meeting egg.
Poorly is how it did.
If it was... Yep.
If the Countess was 22 years old, married to JPM, got preggers, and then looked that big after 3 weeks, and it would make sense that a vampire is one that impregnated her, because we know JPM March isn't one. And she did say, my husband doesn't know before the abortion is performed. Boom, there you go. I don't know. I wish I'd like to hear her opinion of how that might have changed after this episode, but the father is clearly either JPM or Valentino, yes?
No.
Well, I guess not. Like, she could have had another, she could have had another round of sex in between her love of her life and her relation of convenience boredom, but
why was she not arrested for her husband's murders?
She's really good at it.
That doesn't really,
I don't know. Why isn't this Hotel Cortez constantly, you know, why isn't missing persons units just running train on this place?
Yeah, every single person who comes in dies.
Yeah, does no one say, going to try, you know, all the other hotels are busy, going to check out this, you know, at Cortez Hotel, downtown LA. Like, come on.
The lack of Yelp reviews is a Yelp review in itself.
I mean, I get the cell phones don't work inside the place, but yeah. Anyway, or if the fact that there are no Yelp reviews, mm-hmm. it's just like this is a, you know, people check in. It's like the Roach Motel. They check in, but they don't check out.
Mm-hmm.
P.S. The Top Hat tie-in of American Horror Story. You wondered about that.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this was blown wide open in the off season. And she sent me an article from this late spring, early summer. Said Entertainment Weekly confirming that that the Top Hat was a clue alluding to the 1935 Mark Sandrich film Top Hat, which is set in a hotel, and there's a famous dance scene with Fred Astaire's and set in Fred Astaire's hotel room. The second, even more arcane part, the film's song Cheek to Cheek, which Astaire sings to Ginger Rogers, is also the title of Gaga's duet album with Tony Bennett. So it was a double hint. It was taking place in a hotel, and it's going to star Lady Gaga.
Oh, I see.
So there's your Top Hat, already fixed. Sean says, I know in the past I've heard Aaron and Jim mention they're Stephen King fans, and I couldn't help but notice since the beginning of the season a few crossover ideas. In Stephen King's Red Rose, a college professor is determined to prove that ghosts exist and finds a house that was built by a millionaire and plagued with death since its inception. Many people died and disappeared to never be seen again. Ghosts often haunt rooms, and when killed within the grounds of the house, could be stuck there. Also, there are hidden corridors, fake hallways, and secret passages riddled throughout the mansion. It ultimately leads or ends with the ghost taking over the grounds and shutting the evil professor into it. I know the season seems to have a lot of references in The Shining, but if you are familiar, I would like your thoughts on the intersecting tropes of the house and the hotel. You were nodding as if you got all these references. I've not heard of this Red Rose by Stephen King.
You haven't?
No.
I
mean, I've read like the Stephen King classics, The Stand, the Bachman books, Thriller, or not Thriller, Jesus.
That's what's the Michael clown Jackson one? Song.
It. But I haven't read his what was that, the Gunslinger trilogy?
Yeah.
The Dark Throne, the Dark Tower. Dark Tower, that's what it is, right? I've not read a lot of his more obscure stuff. Assuming this is obscure. Hell, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the problem with Stephen King is that he has written so many books.
Sure.
That it's not obscure, it's just you haven't gotten around to it because you've only read this or that. I remember watching this movie. They made a movie out of this one or a miniseries or something when I was younger.
Mm.
But I don't really remember it very much. I just remember concrete angels or like Mary's crying blood. It was scary.
All right. Well, so this is going to be more but for the listeners.
I was nodding. I was nodding along to. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a lot of similarities there.
He continues. What I mostly wanted to point out is the professor's traits and some of John's. Just as John, the professor was driven to the hotel by her workload. Oh, it's a female professor. By her workload, and when she got into the house, it started to become an obsession. Like John, she feels victim to the premises. Fell victim to the premises, and eventually swallowed her into its evil. Do you think there's evidence, too, that this will lead to John's demise, seeing as he is obsessed with the Ten Commandments case and driven by his own sense of madness to the hotel? I mean, I'm all in on the theory that he is, in fact, a Ten Commandments killer, so yes. Yes, I do think it's going to lead to his demise. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. There's no way this doesn't end with him being dead or in jail if the Ten Commandments killer theory is correct.
If there's any justice in the world, then he's going to be stuck in the hotel forever. If he's the Ten Commandments killer.
Speaking of Ten Commandments killer theory, Hef from Connecticut, the vice president and chairman of the John As for Ten Commandments killer.
Double dipping.
Foundation. He has got a bullet point of all the evidence he says backs up this theory in the episode. So John's "I'm right where I need to be" can be seen as having two meanings. A half-truth he tells the doctor to appear submissive to treatment, and a darkly ironic second meaning, "I'm a schizo murderer." The fact the girl refused to use a name when referring to the killer, in my opinion, really seems to indicate it's John. She's not saying it's you, but why would she not give any names, description, or information otherwise? The blackouts and uncharacteristic decisions that John seems to make while suffering from them seems to hint that John and the cop and John the killer are two different people living in the same body. The look the girl was giving John and the unclear answers to his questions, especially, "I like you a lot better than him," read, "This is you much nicer," or "This you is much nicer than the other you," and "Will you kill him," i.e. "Will you stop your other self's rampage," seemed to really hit home this idea. Also, the lighting on John's face in the girl's cell had to be intentional. The shadows of his face seemed to light him in a particularly grim, brooding, scary way. And I wonder if you were to look at his face alongside images of the real-life psycho killers or various movie monsters, if there'd be any parallel. The other thing I want to say, to add to Hef's points, is not just the lighting, but the fact that they cut to half of his face is a very Two-Face, Batman, Jekyll and Hyde kind of camera trick to do.
Yeah.
That there's this dual nature of him.
Right.
So I broadly agree with all those points. And I thought, you know, again, I was surprised to see the people that are following along the Ten Commandments killer theory were unconvinced by this episode. Moving on, Amy J says, "I'm a little confused as to the continuity of the Glampire rules that were set out early on. You're supposed to be the best, most beautiful version of yourself at the point of turning, yet Kathy Bates is still rocking a frumpy mom look. She's no Angela Bassett, but she could definitely look more glamorous than she currently does. Same goes for Alex, too."
I think they did.
Do you think that this is as good as Iris gets? Or this is as good as Alex gets?
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's their ideal perfect versions of themselves.
Well, so I think Alex looks like a gothic... Wait a second. I think Alex looks like a gothic version of a governess when she's wearing her real clothes, and she dresses frumpy and housewifey when she's around John to play that role. And Iris is playing the role of a double agent. So maybe Iris would look a little bit more glampire-y. She'd look more like, you know, awards banquet Kathy Bates if she wasn't on assignment and dedicated to the downfall of Elizabeth.
Sure. Or you could just dress the way you want to dress when Elizabeth isn't dressing you up like a doll, which she did to Tristan, which she did to Donovan, which she did to Alex.
You think Alex is like the gothic, she's being forced to wear the gothic governor stuff?
Yeah. She said, "I'm glad that you were able to fit into my dress." In that first scene. Yeah, she totally dressed her up.
Agaga said that just because you have the blood virus, you can still die, so you have to be careful. Is starvation and dehydration not included in that? Because surely Valentino and Natasha wouldn't have been able to sustain themselves for all those years on just a few rats that were sealed in with them. I mean, that's, I don't know. I mean, obviously, they were a little bit worse for wear. But I don't know what the terminal, like, if they were in there for 500 years, would they just turn into mummies? Would they be dead? What is being dead as a vamp? Because these vampires aren't exactly dead. They're still biologically alive.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And I wonder if Murphy does.
I don't know.
Scientific details of glamparism bore him. Here's a dance number. John from California says, "The series is using Hollywood Forever Cemetery a lot. We got some email on this a couple weeks ago about this whole Hollywood Forever Cemetery, but we got some more interesting information. We already know it was used in the opening scene for the screening of Nosferatu, which came back to this episode. Also, Rudolph Valentino in real life is buried at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, although the gravesite the show is using is not the actual one, which when I found out that was the first thing I was curious about, so I'm glad he included that tidbit, because that would have been pretty pimp. If they actually filmed the scene in front of the real actors, that's like, that's wow.
So meta.
Like, suddenly he's relevant to a whole other generation of American Horror Story fans. Let's maybe not argue the merits of that notoriety. Anyway, also, I think the show made reference to Peter Finch being a double, his stunt double or something like that. For Valentino, apparently this Peter Finch is interned adjacent to Valentino at the cemetery.
Wait, interesting. What?
His stunt double in real life is buried next to him in real life.
No way.
That's kind of pathetic. Sorry there, Finch, and your descendants, but, like, I get it. You're his stunt man and all that, but you should go sleep forever somewhere else, right? Be your own man.
Your own stunt double?
That's what I'm getting from this email from John. Maybe he will correct me. Or you can frantically Google it while I continue his email. The Hollywood Forever Cemetery was closed for some time until it was purchased and revitalized. I have visited it several times during its revitalization, and new owners have done a pretty good job restoring it. Here are a list of some of the fascinating individuals who are buried there. Besides Rudolph Valentino, there's Douglas Fairbanks, Mickey Rooney, Benjamin Bugsy Siegel of Boardwalk Empire fame, and Dee Dee Ramone, who I've never really heard of her.
Dee Dee Ramone?
Is that one of the Ramones, the famous Ramones?
That I don't know. I don't know anything about the Ramones.
Have you confirmed or denied his bullshit Peter Finch story?
But nah, I can't read that fast.
So yeah, I don't know what to make of this Peter Finch thing. Maybe he's a stunt double. Maybe he's a distinguished actor who's got a posthumous award to his name and is notable in this network thing. But I don't know. Maybe we've been led astray. Or maybe I just got the details wrong.
We'll Google more and get back to you next week.
Yeah, when we got a little bit more time. A little bit more time, less horrific experiences at animated STEM museums. that's all we got for this week. As always, if you'd like to send us feedback, you can do at ahs@baldmove.com or on our forums at forums.baldmove.com. We'll see you next week for the latest. Oh, actually, we won't.
Oh, no. We got a week off for the Halloween. This is the shocking news. That
they're giving us a break for the Thanksgiving holiday. So we will not be back next week.
We'll
be back
the following week. Yes. Thanksgiving. Did I just
call Halloween?
No, I did.
Halloween.
Hallowsgiving.
Thanksween.
Hallowsgivingmas.
Yes. Turkey Day. We'll be back the week after. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Bye.